This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
John Ward,
Stuart Burks,
and Don Esselmont.
And I'm Finlay Mason. Now, John, we are fortunate in this city to have a classical radio station that broadcasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you were the initiator of this. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in it?
It stemmed from a hobby and gramophone clubs and things that I've been attended in since the 50s. And there was an occasion where my equipment in my gramophone room was being set up and helped a little bit with a fellow who from all accounts was from we had set the Massey radio station up. And it was after a complaint from me he had asked me to listen to Massey Radio for an hour to hear a classical broadcast that they were putting on, especially on a Sunday morning, 9 o'clock, classical music broadcast. I listened to it and bumped into this fellow sometime later after the appraisal and told him, asked him in fact, why isn't Massey broadcasting classical music a little bit more frequently? And that I was just up in Auckland, could hear Wallpaper Mozart virtually in Auckland from a radio station, the records being supplied by Marbets up there. And it was marvellous. No voices, just music. And we could have something here. I'd love it if that would be the case in Palmerston North from Radio Massey. He says, we can't afford the music base. We have looked at it. I said, well, I've got a few records that have beat him, I said. And he came round home and had a look at all the library and suggested that, and he saw a mechanism on my workshop. It was a jukebox mechanism. 100 CD rotary mechanism, carousel they called it. The records, he said, what is that? And I told him, and he said, could it play classical music? I mean, could it do ordinary CDs? And I said, yes, oh yes. And demonstrated to him, just throw the record in and push the button once and away it goes. He said, well, why can't you operate from here? I said, I don't know anything about broadcast. I don't know anything about radios. I've built plenty of amplifiers, but not radio amplifiers. And he said, we could set you up. I said, well, as I say, where can I get the transmitters from? He said, no, we'll set you up completely. I know a bloke I can get into.
About when was this, John?
This was in 1998.
And over 20 years.
Well,
continuously for 20 years?
Yeah. It's never stopped.
You referred to your collection of records. How did this start? It's a long time interest you've had in classical music?
Since I heard my grandmother playing a piano, on a little 78 that had been sent out to us family, our family in 42 or 43, and there was a wind-up gramophone borrowed. We played this record, and the fellow that we borrowed the machine from had a guitar, and he was very, very keen on singing, and he bought some records of Blue Lives, singing things like the Blue Tail Fly, and that got me hooked on this gramophone record. And I wanted one of those, and I didn't get one until about 46. My father gave me one for my birthday, and quickly I was concerned about the wearing out of the records with a steel needle, and because the records were very expensive, and it was a lot of fizzy drink bottles to salvage to demurrage to get to buy records.
That's because you got money for returning the
bottles, yeah. And
how much did you get a bottle?
Threepence.
In those
each bottle?
For a fizzy drink bottle, yeah.
In those days, you paid ninepence for your fizzy drink.
No.
Threepence back when you returned the bottle.
Oh, yeah, and these, yeah. But these were glass bottles, not
yeah,
glass.
Yeah, yeah, they were glass bottles. And, yeah. Yep, that's true. And yeah, so, and beer bottles are a lot more plentiful, but they were a penny. And there were bigger bottles and hard handling. They were, but the royal ones to me were the fizzy drinks. But you, when Coca-Cola came in, there was a demurrage of about sixpence on it.
On the bottle. Now, it took many, many bottles, fizzy or beer,
yeah.
to
we
buy
managed
one
to,
record.
Yeah, well, it eventually built my gramophone to start
do
with.
Do you recall how much a record would have cost in those
years? Yes, the 12-inch LP, 78.
78?
The 78, yeah. The cheap one was 3 and 6. And the,
okay.
And the...
3 shillings and sixpence, so
yes,
12,
yeah.
14 bottles would give you an LP?
No, not an LP, a 78.
Oh, a 78, four, yeah, sorry.
4 minutes aside.
4 minutes aside on the 78
record. And I was collecting overtures. First started with the Rossinio, Schubert overture of Rosamund.
So you listened to them in 4 minute blocks?
And turned the record over and play the other side. This was a three-sided record, excuse me.
A three-sided record?
It had,
that's an interesting thought.
Well, they had a... They sold you. It was half-price, too.
Half-price, three-sided
record.
So how did they get three? The record
half,
has got two
one
sides.
Side, one record was half-price. So instead of paying 3 and 6, because it was on a cheap HMV, a plum label HMV, because it was... and you paid just under 2 shillings, 1 and 8 or something, for the other record.
But you said three-sided. You mean there were three records?
No. Each record was a double side.
Yeah.
So there's two sides of the... So you turn the record over, and you had side three is a single record without...
Oh, a record with just
blank.
One side on.
Yeah, but it's a blank on the other side.
Okay.
Simply. And that was 1 and 8, you see. So that's 3 and 6 for the first one, and 1 and 8 pence for the second one. But
that
you
gives
bought
you
the whole
minutes.
Thing.
Yeah.
That gave me approximately that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it was the Symphony Orchestra, which is the forerunner to the Philharmonia. The Symphony Orchestra and was conducted by Sir Malcolm Sargent. He was known as Malcolm Sargent. And Flash Harry. That was his flash name.
And that was from the UK then? Wasn't it?
He made the record in 1933.
And then, simultaneously, the vinyl 12-inch 33 RPM records arrived with the same time as the 45 RPM pop records.
Not in New Zealand, no. The LPs, the first of the LPs arrived around late 49, 1950, were the Deccas, only Decca.
Now, the LPs are long players.
Long-playing records.
Long-playing, because there's more time on them.
Mm.
And RPM is revolutions per minute. How fast the record goes round.
That was 33 and a third record.
So you could get a lot more time on the same size record.
We call them 33s.
The 33 had playing time each for about 20 minutes, wasn't it?
Oh, up to 35 minutes per side.
Right.
Depending on the depth of the cut.
Yeah. Was that when you talked about the metal needle, that was just a single point that went in the groove?
And well, then that was
the 78. Was it the diamond stylus that picked up on...
No,
you could have stereo or...
They're miles away from stereo.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. We knew nothing about stereo in those years, in the war years, not at all. And but my first LP I actually bought in 1950.
Were you able to buy that locally? Because
yes, HMV sales and service on the corner of Rangitiki and Kiva Streets.
Yes.
Mr. Gollins was the manager.
And at the same time, playing equipment had become available.
Not for the LPs. I had to send to Britain. Yes, so the records were the playing of the vinyl was simply another facet of playing gramophone records in the way that you couldn't treat them like 78s in any way, what shape or whatever.
What do you mean you couldn't treat them?
Because they were very, very soft vinyl. You couldn't handle them easily without damaging them. 78s were almost, you could throw them around the room without, if they didn't crack, you could play
them. They were thicker and harder.
If they were brittle, yes, and they were full of clay. They were intended to, the clay was added to the Bakelite, I think it was, to make the, wear the needle rather than the needle wear the record.
Oh, that was the 78s?
78s, yeah.
Mind you, John, I lost about 5 78s when I misjudged my step across the pile of records. So they didn't stand that sort of treatment.
No, they certainly didn't. One heel and you've lost a pile.
But that was a problem with records generally. If there was scratch, say if the needle slipped across the the groove.
It wasn't so bad on the 78s. It was you could put up with it because they were scratchy anyway, sounding.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You got that shh, that sound, and you'd get the odd click.
Oh, yeah.
And that was more than a lateral scratch. It'd just be a bit of dirt.
Oh, yeah. But with an LP, if the needle had skidded across the LP,
it was,
each time it goes round, you get a sort of click
because it was a soft product. It got engraved.
Yes.
Fresh engravement by lateral engravement.
And it would jump tracks or stay on the one track.
Yeah, depending on.
I say, sometimes it stays on the same track, so you just hear the same bit going over and
depends
over again.
On,
yeah.
You know how plastic, when you cut plastic, it has a little
lip on it.
That would catch the needle and bounce it. You'd see, depending on which way the lip was.
So by the time vinyl arrived, though, you'd had amassed a fair collection of 78.
Oh, yes, I still have them. I still have the first one I ever brought home in my jersey on the bush bike coming home from HMV Sales and Service.
And, of course, in due course, CD replaced the vinyl, and your, by this time, quite large collection of vinyl.
Oh, yes, and I still have the first of those and all of the others up, and since replaced many of them as CDs.
It's interesting, though, that the compact discs, although they took over for a long time, there's been a bit of a revival of vinyl now, isn't there?
Well,
do they feel there's a purer sound to it?
No, I could go in volumes and that. Technically, it's not musically feasible to improve on the CD musically.
Okay, so why is vinyl becoming more popular?
Because you can't get, I don't know, they think they've always had it's a fable, fallacy thing.
Okay.
You've still got the same amplifiers, an amplifier is an amplifier, whether it's valves or whatever. When you look at the measurements of a modern transistor amplifiers, they're so clean and pure.
Yeah.
You never had that in valves.
Yeah.
You've always had, for a start, they had the problem of the 230 mains affecting it seriously. And
meaning what? You get fluctuations in power?
And not only that, the hum.
50 cycle.
Mm, and it's always 100 cycles because you get 100 cycles.
When you say and valves, it's like that before transistors, they used valves, and they had to, like the radio that used valves, you turn it on and you've got to wait, 10, 15 seconds before any sound
and
comes.
And what did
through,
you hear first on the sound? You always heard on that electromagnetic speaker, a hum sound.
Yeah.
And look at your motor cars with a vibrator in the car. That hums louder than the music. Now, when it comes to transistors, there ain't no hum.
Yeah.
All you've got is atmospherics. And this is what I found in my surround sound development in 1963 with using valves and vinyl, particularly the vinyl. Anything above me and around me in the tetrahedral setup, which is some differential sound, it's just like a dip in a motor car, and it's trajectory of the 360 degrees around the recordings to 360 degrees of sound.
Now, when you're saying a tetrahedral setup,
it's being in a room.
So you do, but so how many speakers are you coming?
Well, you could
from?
Have as many as you like. I'm setting up my gramophone room with 18 speakers, all different channels.
Okay.
And that gives you then the feel of being in the hall or the room of the recording, if it's recorded in 3D. And all your vinyls since the tape recorder, they've been recording in 3D on tape since around the middle or the end of the war years. As demonstrated by Decca's output recently, a compendium of early performances recorded. Gee, they thought they were just so fresh and as though they were just recorded yesterday or today.
Yeah. And their sound. They should do unless they deteriorate. Yeah.
Well, they didn't deteriorate. When you digitalise something, it's there forever.
Yes.
So, John, as we've passed 78 vinyl now onto compact discs, you've continued to collect music. Is there a particular genre that you've collected? I do understand your collection of pop records isn't very big, for instance.
My collection of pop records probably outstrips my classics. You see, my gramophone hobby got me into trouble in respect to the fact that I did the first demonstration in Palmerston North in stereo. I had already built the amplifiers. I built my first Williamson, then built the second one, double
What's
the power.
Williamson?
The DTN Williamson was the first of the non-commercial, but the first of the granddaddy amplifiers that were built. First push-pull amplifier class A has ever been designed. It's physics in motion.
Essentially designed for commercial use?
Yes, it was.
Yes, okay.
And the records the companies picked on it because it was bringing out so many flaws out of the owner recordings. They had to obtain this equipment to make the record sound acceptable, so we'll call it. And so anyway, it was to drive the cutters. But when it came to this demonstration, that was a massive demonstration in the Lutheran Hall in 1958, July. I'd already been in Chris Thorogood, was the son of the mayor of Fielding, called Thorogood, around April of that year. And that's where we actually set up using his preamp and my preamp, and we made, not him, but a fellow called Derek Bennett and myself, produced a little cartridge of two small mini cartridges, Cobra cartridges, that were both mono, put them together and we slung a stylus between them with a bit of piano, very, very, very fine piano wire. And then we had this elephant glue. We stuck it together with that, and it was perfect. And just we put a Rennet stylus, and it was cradled in the V of the
groove?
Between, no, the V of the link between the two cartridge actuators. They were just ceramic cartridges. And we had trained them. We borrowed, and Chris Thorogood was 2XW. He was Whanganui. He was an announcer over there, or a technician over in Whanganui. And he lived in my street in Guy Avenue. He said, well, I'll borrow the records. He said, I can get them from, we had a release from HMV in Wellington. Was he interested? And I said, oh, yeah, heck, we don't like the records. So he borrowed all these records. And we had them for a month, 3 or 4 months. And they were the ones we used in the demonstrations. At the Lutheran Hall to Palmerston North was our recorded music society that I'd set up with a friend.
Ah, so you'd started with the radio station was quite a long way down the whole process of you doing something involving the public.
Yes, yeah. And that was...
That was in 1958?
1958 in July. That was the one in Palmerston North, Lutheran, but Chris Thorogood for fielding. In his home, they've got a place that overlooks on the western hill that overlooks Fielding, and that's exactly where I've got my transmitter in Fielding. There's the water tower, the water tank, which is on the same hill, only about a street back from it, higher up still.
Now, with your classical music collection, do you have multiple versions of the same symphony and so on?
Naturally you do. There's a case where I tried to reproduce obtain a recording of the Royal Philharmonic and the Beecham recording of the very first LPs I bought, indeed, were from EMI. The EMI stand, and they came in late 52, 53, and they were the Beecham Eroica and the Great C Major, played by Barbaroli, the conductor, with the Liverpool Philharmonic. And they were instant hits, particularly the Schubert, the Great C Major. Yeah.
Now, would you say then that the classical music, it's all written down, with all the instructions.
Yeah.
With pop music, you get different covers that could be quite different versions. And would you say that with the classical,
the
it's similar, different conductors can play the same piece and it sounds quite different?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, that was actually a selling point when the HMV turned up with these, they put all these new LPs up and they were so colourful. The Eroica, for a start, was yellow and orange
picture. The cover.
The cover. Beautiful. And Barbaroli was quite... it was rich, ruby red. Mm. And with Barbaroli in the middle of it. So they were attractive for a start. And I didn't know the Great C Major, but I loved
it. But the sounds were quite different with different conductors or different orchestras?
When I played, no. The sounds of EMI were quite different from Decca.
Not just the production, but the interpretation of the music. Is that different?
Very much so, depending on who recorded it and who played it.
Now, you mentioned the LPs, how big were they? Because there was an issue of as you said, the artwork on the cover of LPs, and when we moved to CDs, which were much smaller, it greatly limited the quality of the artwork or the nature of the artwork
That's true. Then they simply just reduced in size the old artwork too, so you could identify your purchase. That was the original type of classical edition on CDs. Okay.
So when you moved into building up your collection of CDs, you then would try to purchase those original copies which you had as vinyls, did you?
Exactly
and
right.
And they were fairly readily available then?
They became gradually readily available. But you asked the question earlier about had I many copies of whatever performance?
Yes.
Not the performance, but the music. And this is where the Beecham, the Eroica, I tried to emulate it again on different LPs. And then when stereo came in, they never reproduced that, because I found it was recorded not in England, but somewhere else. And they didn't record it in stereo. So Beecham had died in 1958, 59 or something. Oh, hang on, a bit later than that. He died in early 61, it was, February. And he hadn't recorded the he had never recorded the Beethoven's Fifth, but they came up with a mono recording of part of it and the rehearsals of it that he'd done in 51.
So in that original recording, it hadn't been recorded from a number of separate microphones. So it wasn't able to be re-engineered.
Well, I guess it could have. They used to use highlighting microphones. They'd set up an array of microphones to get the little solo bits coming through, obbligato parts to come through in a massive symphony, so that they could be recorded clearly.
In those days, were they each recorded separately?
No,
they
talk
about having multiple tracks. Yeah. It all went onto the same track?
Yeah. But in the EMI, who invented stereo, and Decca, who followed in on all this, they were recording on separate tracks. They had half inch tape. That was the big size that they had to start with, half inch tape. Then they went to inch side.
Magnetic tape to record
And all those recordings that were done, all the early recordings of the 40s, late 40s rather, of Karajan with the Vienna Philharmonic before he came to Britain, they were all done. They've all been reproduced again, but they were tape recordings. They were done, made by Teldecker.
Now that's a dimension Decker. You haven't covered. You got records and CDs, but did you ever have the cassettes or the cartridges?
They were just toys.
Yeah.
You just don't continue. I could never.
They're portable, I suppose.
No, it was not even that. It was the fact that to try and listen to classical music on a cassette, it is like going back to an old 78. The noise, the wow flatter, and the flutter factor in it, like the unstable business, is bad news. So I ended up with all these recordings of Beecham. Do you know how many I've got now? Some 37 Eroicas, including CDs, and have only just...
What, you mean all by Beecham? Or
no,
or,
no, different versions.
Different
I had Elder Normsby ring me up in 2006, and he said he was looking at Sky... And I'm hearing an Eroica. You know how you've been looking for an Eroica that is lyrical? He said, I've got the most lyrical Eroica I've ever heard, John. He says, here's a replacement for your Beecham. He knew I was after the Beecham one. He said, can you listen to... Oh, no, I can't get Sky Eldon. And he said, so I looked it up in the Amazon, and here they had the records available, so I bought the whole set.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.